Support for IPR comes from Security Abstract Company, providing trusted, comprehensive abstract and title services to the Johnson County real estate market since 1898. Located in downtown Iowa City and at securityabstractcompany.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. School board elections are designed to be nonpartisan. In a normal election cycle, it's not unusual for school board members to run uncontested, and voter interest and turnout is historically pretty low. This year is anything but normal. Our polarized political environment has resulted in crowded ballots. Many candidates have been inspired to run because of their feelings about COVID mitigation in the schools and Iowa's new law restricting how historical race and gender bias can be talked about in schools. There has also been an influx of outside money into some school board elections, and Governor Kim Reynolds has taken the unusual step of endorsing and campaigning for a school board candidate in Ankeny. This hour, we'll take a closer look at a few of the school board elections taking place around the state. I'll talk with Monique Scarlett, a school board member in Sioux City, about what it's like to serve, and then we'll try to put this moment in perspective with Lisa Bartusik. She is executive director of Iowa Association of School Boards, and Jody Butler, who worked on education policy in the Branstad administration in the 90s. My first guest today is Iowa Public Radio's education reporter, Grant Gerlach. Hello, Grant.
Good morning, Charity.
And you've been covering so many school board meetings all over the state in the last 2 years. It's impossible to cover all of the school board elections going on in the state, but what are some of the trends you're seeing this year?
Well, some of the trends are, as you mentioned, the number of candidates and just the environment around school boards going into this election. Normally, school board elections might be about facilities or levies or bonds, you know, a lot about spending and staffing and issues like that. But this time around, in several school districts, issues that are very polarizing, very political, are working their way into these elections. Things like masks in schools, things like opposition to critical race theory, or how people perceive schools teaching race and equity issues. Those are some of the things that are part of the campaigns this year that are a little different than what you would expect to see.
Well, and we are seeing people motivated to run for school board on both sides of both of those issues. We see people who you know, are concerned about making sure that safety mitigation measures are in place, like mask mandates and that kind of thing running. We also see what seems to be perhaps a more organized effort on the other side. The anti-mask folks, the anti-vaccine folks seem to be more organized and more vocal in some of these elections. Why don't you take us to Ankeny, which is a particular hotspot, and tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Yeah, Ankeny is a particular hotspot when it comes to the mask issue. And that's because really since the pandemic took hold and changed how schools had to operate, this has been an issue up there. And there are a couple people, Emily Peterson and Kimberly Reeks, who've been very outspoken against requiring masks in schools. They formed a Facebook group about this and have been organizing parents and other community members around the topic. They are often at school board meetings talking about this or confrontational with board members and people who speak in support of masks. And they sometimes, or their supporters sometimes, state falsehoods about masks, that they don't work or that they're generally harmful to children to wear, which isn't true. But generally, they're focused on opposing mandates in schools, opposing mask mandates. Of course, Iowa passed a law in May that said schools cannot require mandates, but that was flipped when a federal judge issued a restraining order against Iowa's law. And that's taken their opposition and this issue to another level just as these school board elections come up.
Well, and I mentioned already that Governor Kim Reynolds has taken the really unusual step of endorsing one of these candidates in the Ankeny race. And try to put that in perspective for me. That I've never seen that happen, I don't think, in my lifetime. How unusual is that?
Yeah, I'm not aware of another case quite like it. Governor Reynolds made an appearance at the kickoff event for Sarah Barthol, who's running for the Ankeny School Board. And they met because Barthel was active and outspoken about fully reopening schools back when districts like Ankeny were still in hybrid mode last winter. And eventually that became a state law that schools had to be fully open, offer 100% in-person learning. So that's how they met and how that connection was made between Barthel and Governor Reynolds. It is unusual for that to turn into an endorsement from the governor in what is, as you mentioned, ostensibly nonpartisan race. Their candidates' parties aren't listed on the ballot if they have a party affiliation. But it does introduce that in this case. Barthel is someone who supports parents choosing on masks, which is also the governor's position. The group that I mentioned that opposes mask mandates in Ankeny, they support Barthel, but she herself on her own Facebook posts has tried to distance herself from that group, saying she isn't directly part of that group.
Interesting. Well, we are seeing these highly contentious races all over the state. And in just a moment, we're going to talk with reporters in Ames and also Cedar Rapids. You are based in the Des Moines area. And another race that's nearby that has been making a lot of noise is in Waukee. Tell me a little bit more about that one.
Yeah, in Waukee, the issue of race and equity came up at the school board. And I think it really surprised district leaders and some of the school board members how it kind of took off. This started when the district adopted a set of equity and diversity standards in the wake of Black Lives Matter protests and the murder of George Floyd. And they had to go back and review those standards in response to a state law that was passed that says schools can't teach that Iowa or the U.S. are systemically racist and there's a series of other ideas that can't be taught in schools. So they had to go back through their standards and make sure that all the language there complies with this new state law. And they put together a committee, staff members, students, and an education attorney to make sure they were doing that, brought those revisions to the board, and it seemed like they thought it would be pretty straightforward, but instead it instigated this really huge debate with people, parents coming forward and saying things like, you know, we don't want the school to teach our kids values about diversity or equity that we don't approve of. People really questioning what the school was teaching. And this is part of a larger trend we've seen of parents, conservative parents in particular, questioning how schools are teaching ideas of race and equality. And so now this has become an issue in the school board race. And there's, I think four positions that will be open on the school board.
Right. Eight candidates for four positions.
Eight candidates. And four of those candidates are supported by a local campaign committee who's supporting them as sort of a slate of candidates. And says basically these are the candidates that would take a more conservative approach to this idea of teaching race at school. And the language on the website is pretty interesting. They say on the website, this is the most important school board election for Waukee ever, which is the kind of rhetoric you might expect to hear about a congressional race or a presidential race, but this is for a school board race. And it says that the mission of the committee is to defend the district from a movement to teach harmful political ideology. So that's really the issue that they're running on and pushing these candidates for.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see what voter turnout is like in these races. A lot of municipalities have linked their school board elections to city council races to try to boost turnout. And that seems to have been successful in the past because school board races have historically not generated a whole lot of interest. So it will be interesting to see how this turns out. Grant, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Grant Gerlach, IPR's education reporter, on the line with us now. And now we're going to travel up to Ames. And my next guest is Philip Sitter. He's the K-12 and higher education reporter for the Ames Tribune. Hello, Philip.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And in the Ames School District, there are seven candidates running for three open seats. Tell me a little bit about that race.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the same issues that Grant talked about. Ames is also at a moment where a lot of different factors are coming together. We are in the middle of a superintendent search. The previous superintendent resigned in May, and we have an interim superintendent for the current school year. So whoever's elected in November will be part of that search process and will help decide who the next superintendent is. That's an issue that the candidates are very much aware of. A couple of them have said that's the most important thing they will do on the school board. Again, we also have COVID-19 mitigation reactions. We have things about diversity and equity work. Particular to Ames, the district tried a Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action back in February. That received a lot of attention nationally, as well as from state lawmakers who had a hearing in March, I believe, where district administrators were called to testify, and that was a very tense hearing. We are still feeling the fallout from that. We also have several important policy decisions to be made about the future of the use of school resource officers in the district, as well as dealing with some student discipline and behavior issues at the high school. So there's a lot of things going on at the same time here, and they're all going to come together in the school board race.
So it sounds like there was already some momentum behind people getting involved in this race before the mask issue really blew up.
Yes. And I actually just looked this morning at the previous election, 2019. So the number of candidates we have is not unprecedented. There were, in 2019, seven candidates for four seats. In that school board race, there were about 13,000 votes in the race, and then overall turnout for the election was about 12%. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how that compares to this year once all is told. So,
right. And you are seeing the conservative candidates in the district running on a slate, which is what we're seeing in Waukee as well. Yard signs with three names on them, right?
Yes. Tom Pearl, Kira Wurstein, and Rolf Dubik. And I've been here since January, so I don't immediately know how unusual that is for candidates to run together. I will say the other four candidates seem to be running individually, but they are also on a pretty similar page in terms of their stances on different policies and issues.
So. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Philip Sitter. He's the K-12 and higher education reporter for the Ames Tribune. This hour, we're talking about school board elections across the state of Iowa, highly contentious races in many communities around the state this year. We'll find out more in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from Security Abstract Company, providing trusted, comprehensive abstract and title services to the Johnson County real estate market since 1898, located in downtown Iowa City and at securityabstractcompany.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about school board elections around the state of Iowa. School board elections are designed to be nonpartisan, and often these elections don't draw a whole lot of attention. Things are very different this year. Surprise, surprise. In 2021, things are very different. So we're talking about some of the most contentious races around the state in a few minutes. I'll talk with a school board member in Sioux City about what it's like to serve. And then we'll also try to put this moment in perspective with Lisa Partusik. She is executive director of Iowa Association of School Boards, and Jody Butler, who worked on education in the Branstad administration in the 90s. And with me still is Philip Sitter. He is the K-12 and higher education reporter for the Ames Tribune. And Philip, just before the break, we were talking about the race in Ames, seven candidates for three positions. We've got three of the conservative candidates running together as a slate. And one of the other things that we haven't had a chance to talk about is money. So tell me what people are concerned about, or maybe not concerned about, with money coming into the Ames School Board elections this year.
There's a local political action committee. It's called Ames Deserves Better, and it was founded this year, I think, in large part due to the Black Lives Matter Week of Action. It's pushback from a couple of local parents who felt that the district overstepped its bounds in terms of what it should be teaching their children. Now, we don't reports on, you know, who's been giving money to whom aren't available yet from the Ethics Commission, but we should hopefully know that soon. The three candidates, Duvick, Pearl, and Wornstein, have all publicly denied that they are financially supported by this group. So again, I think there's a lot left to be seen about who actually is giving money to whom. But again, the three candidates who have been kind of at the center of rumors about this have all publicly denied that they are financially tied to this group.
Interesting. Well, again, it'll be interesting to see how this turns out in the end. Philip Sitter, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Philip Sitter is a K-12 and higher education reporter for the Ames Tribune. And now we're going to turn to Cedar Rapids. Grace King is the K-12 education reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Hello, Grace.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. So in the Cedar Rapids School District, and I know you cover many districts, but let's just focus on Cedar Rapids. In the Cedar Rapids School District, 9 people are running for 3 vacancies. Tell me what's going on there.
Yeah, so we have several people running. There's a few hot issues, paraeducator pay, masks, of course, opportunity gaps for students who are low income and students of color, and school resource officers, as well as facilities plans are all things that these candidates are concerned about and want to have a voice in.
Now, this is a nonpartisan election, but can you give me an idea of how things break down? I know a lot of people have been motivated to get involved in local politics because of the movement for racial justice that, you know, really burgeoned after George Floyd's murder. I know that a lot of people have been moved to get into local politics because they are anti-mask or, you know, whatever is driving their feelings. And those people tend to be on opposite sides of the coin. How do things break down with those 9 candidates?
Yeah, it seems like a large number of the candidates want mask options for their families in the Cedar Rapids School District. They don't like that there's a requirement at the moment and would like families to have to be able to make that choice for themselves. And there's just a couple of candidates who are really concerned about the school resource officer issue that the school board this year spent about 6 months talking about a new agreement with the Cedar Rapids Police Department and the city of Cedar Rapids for resource officers in their schools. So that's been a big topic of conversation. And of course, that was brought to the school board by students in August 2020 during kind of the height of Black Lives Matter marches in Cedar Rapids.
The mask issue, of course, is a big one. It's contentious around the state. We have had the opportunity with the school the Cedar Rapids district and a number of other districts to really look at what was going on in the district with COVID before the mask mandate was put back in place and what was going on in the district after. What are you seeing in Cedar Rapids?
Yes. So it's been about a month of the reinstated mask mandate. And before it was reinstated, there were almost 100 students who were positive at the time for COVID-19. Today, as of Friday, I think there were about 26 students positive. So definitely trending in the right direction. The district also announced plans for stepping back on the mask mandate. If the positivity rate in Linn County drops below 14%, transmission levels dip, positivity rate for students specifically is below 2%, and cases of people 17 and younger drops below 10%. So we're definitely looking at those numbers. And like I said, we're trending in the right direction here.
And do you feel like seeing the results of the mask mandate being put back in place, does that affect any of the rhetoric in the school board election, or is that beside the point?
You know, we've seen a year and a half of data on masks, and there's still conversations about whether or not they might be effective. I think that, you know, seeing the numbers drop like this in a month of a mask mandate shows that they are doing something to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 in schools. But there are candidates who still want to see those masks be optional.
What's your feeling on public interest in this election in Cedar Rapids?
I have never seen more people talk at public comment during school board meetings, I've sat through hours of community
I'm sure
members.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful, you know, it's wonderful to see people getting involved, to, you know, realize how much the decisions of the school board members do affect their students. There's been a lot of learning about, you know, what you should do during a school board meeting. Like, you shouldn't try to comment after the public comment period. We had a school board meeting in Cedar Rapids that ended early, that the school board president ended early after community members continued to speak after public comment was over. So I know that's been frustrating for school boards. They are trying to listen to the community. But there's just a lot of heated people right now.
For sure. And of course, it's interesting to see so many people running for school board at a time when it's probably never been more difficult to be on a school board. And Grace, after talking to you and Philip, I do need to also put in a plug for everybody's local newspapers. Of course, reporters are following these local school board elections. These are nonpartisan elections, so you need to do your research before you go to the polls. And your local newspaper is going to help you do that. Grace King, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you.
Grace King is the K-12 education reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. This hour, we are talking about school board elections around the state. And now we're going to shift gears just a little bit to talk about what it's like to be on a school board. We have seen these contentious meetings. In some districts, that has led to personal attacks on school board members. There have even been incidents of protesters gathering outside the homes of individual school board members. Monique Scarlett is the vice president of the Sioux City School Board, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Monique.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And now you've been on the school board for 2 years, right?
That is correct. 2 years.
All right. So tell me what the climate has been like. I mean, you were there a little bit before the pandemic. You've endured all of this. Tell me what the climate's been like on the Sioux City School Board this year.
Well, I think I can best describe it as ever-evolving rapid changes. And you're holding on tight and trying to be patient and understanding and all of that. So I've witnessed and seen a lot of changes amongst our community. Our educators, our students. And so I think as a community, we are unique here in Sioux City. We're trying to come together and work together and, you know, just do the things that are right. And necessarily, our opinion does not mean that it's the right way, but we're just trying to work together and get through this.
What motivated you to run for school board?
Well, I volunteered over 20 years as a parent and just a community leader. And when I seen that there were 4 seats available in 2019, I received many calls from community members and people, I say in right places, that had asked me to consider running. And that was something I was not considering at the time. But then I seen that there needed to be some things improved on, some things that I felt like I could bring to the table. And so I did run and ended up getting in third. And so that was... I was very surprised, but very pleased.
So, of course, school boards have been very high profile this year and mostly surrounding these hot button issues, surrounding the mitigation factors for COVID-19 and also conversations about racial justice and what can and cannot be taught in our schools. What else do school board members do? Tell me about the ho-hum regular things that you have to get done as a member of a school board.
Well, our day is never ending. People don't realize, you know, between the emails and phone calls and text and in-person meetings, and this is a non-paid position, and so our job is not an easy one. But it can be rewarding, again, when people can sit down and have those open discussions. So a board member's daily life is always answering questions or finding out information or, you know, I make several calls to our administrative team to get the facts. And then we talk amongst each other as board members to engage in conversations that we can come together and hopefully you know, limit those meetings, those regular school board meetings, and try to limit special meetings, which we have coming up. And so it's never ending as a school board educator And we do have some hot topics, you know, from the mask to critical race theory and things like that. And I believe that we're always focusing on things that we can't do. And I like to flip that and say, what can we do now that these laws have changed, been modified and amended? What can we do? And it's not what we can't do, it's what we can do.
These positions are designed to be nonpartisan. Do you feel like when you are with your other school board members that it's a nonpartisan space?
You know, this election coming up, there's been, I don't feel that way. I'll be very honest. I believe that politics are playing a huge part in this election. And for me, that is very disappointing because I ran for school board for the students. I ran for those that feel like they don't have a voice. And now I feel like political parties are taking a strong arm in this election. And I just want to keep in mind for those candidates, I want them to keep on the forefront that we are in this for the student, the educator, and what's overall best for our community, and not get those priorities mixed up.
So it sounds like you had to be coaxed a little bit into running for school board. And a lot of people who were motivated to run during this cycle were motivated because they were angry about something. What do you think needs to be done going forward to motivate other people to run for school board for the students in a nonpartisan way?
Well, first of all, I think that we need to understand that when you're running out of anger or frustration, you're operating in a mode of reacting. And when you react, you don't think soundly. But when you actually respond, that is different. Then you have your priorities in perspective. And so I think it just takes a moment of people just stopping, stop talking. I heard someone say, we have two ears, one mouth. There's a reason why God made us that way, because he wants us to listen more than what we talk. And so I think if we listen to what our students are really saying, listen to what our educators are really needing, and listen to what will make our community collaborative, then we're successful as a candidate, and we can be elected to that office to fulfill it and serve it well.
Do you think you'll run again when it's your time?
You know, I have 2 years left. To be honest, when 2 years gets here, I will let everyone know. But I tell you, I won't let things be left hanging. I won't get out of this fight until I feel like it's in control. And right now, I feel like people think they're in control, but it's out of control. And I feel like there's a lot of work to be done. It's not just our district, because our district, again, is unique. We do things well, and we do things that we need to improve on. But I think across the state of Iowa, things are out of control, and they need to be put back into a perspective.
Monique Scarlett, thank you so much for talking with me.
Oh, you are welcome. You have a great day.
You too. Monique Scarlett is the vice president of the Sioux City School Board. And we're talking about school board elections around the state of Iowa right now. To help us put what's going on right now in perspective, I'm going to turn to Lisa Bartusik. She is executive director of the Iowa Association of School Boards. Hello, Lisa.
Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I already asked Monique a little bit about what school board members do. Can you fill out that picture a little bit better for us? Because, again, so many people don't pay any attention to the school board until something really contentious happens. What is the role of most school board members?
Absolutely. School boards in Iowa have many responsibilities under the law, including planning and goal setting, as Monique mentioned. What do we do well and where will we improve? How do we allocate resources to that, especially around improvements in student learning? They have responsibilities for policy pretty much across the board in terms of the district's, how the district will operate, its employment policies, its operational policies, and facilities, a wide swath of responsibility in that policy area. And certainly they have fiscal responsibility, the district's financial health, its budget, oversight of expenditures, and many more.
And as I have mentioned several times this hour, this is designed to be a nonpartisan position. Why do you think that's important?
Iowa has a long, long history of nonpartisan school board elections. My observation over 30 years of working with school boards and for school boards is that diverse views in a community come together at the board table and talk about their shared objectives for students and the partisan aspect of people's lives, their personal political affiliations may influence their perspectives and values, but when they come together at the board table, it's what do we share for that we want for the students, the families in our communities.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Lisa, stay with us, please. Lisa Bartusik is Executive Director of the Iowa Association of School Boards. This hour, we're talking about school board elections around the state of Iowa. We're also going to try to put this moment that we're experiencing right now in perspective. Look at maybe other times in history where politics have inserted themselves into our school board elections. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Over the past couple of years, school boards have found themselves to be at the center of an unusual amount of attention because of policies and safety measures related to the pandemic, but also because of a wave of laws put forth by Republican politicians in an effort to control what schools can teach about historical racial and gender biases. Iowa has one of those new laws. Now, it's election season for school boards all across the state. Ballots are unusually crowded and campaigns are unusually contentious. And to help us understand what's going on, we've got Lisa Bartusik here. She is executive director of the Iowa Association of School Boards. And Lisa, just before the break, we were talking about how these positions are designed to be nonpartisan and why that works out well or has worked out well, historically speaking, in many ways. Iowa schools have also historically been very strong as far as local control. School boards and administrators have been able to make a lot of their own decisions in their local districts. We've seen that change. The Reynolds administration has taken a very different approach to local decision making. How does that affect school boards around the state?
Well, I would say that the trend toward state and federal government making more decisions about local education less significantly prior to the current administration, and it's not attributed to one party or another. There needs to be a balance between local decision-making and flexibility to actually adapt to local circumstances, local capacity, even values in the local community, with the ability at the state level to define what should be common for all students in our state, and to the extent appropriate at the federal level, certain laws such as a commitment to education for students with disabilities, federal commitment. We view it as an important balance and often see the need for greater flexibility at the local level.
Over the last few years, tell me a little bit about what you've seen as far as engagement goes with people being willing to run for school board and getting excited about being part of these positions.
Certainly. You know, for the last 4 years since 2017 election, we've been carefully monitoring the number of candidates that run for election. We've seen a slight decrease in the number of incumbents running again, from 67% of incumbents running again in 2017 to 64% in 2019, and 61% of incumbents have filed this year. So there's a slight decrease in the number of incumbents running, but not a huge shift this year. And this year we are seeing an increase in the number of new candidates. I think for the reasons you've been talking about this hour, school board elections are getting the kind of public attention I think that the Iowa Association of School Boards always believed they were worth. There are important decisions made by school boards in every community. So, and this year, the kind of focus and attention that we're seeing, we have about 100 more candidates statewide than we had in 2019. So more interest in candidacy.
We're seeing more interest, and as I was talking about with Philip Sitter a little while ago, we're also seeing an influx of money into some of these campaigns, and running for school board has historically been a fairly low barrier way to get involved in your local community and local politics. Are you concerned in seeing money getting poured into some of these campaigns that it may change the way people can or cannot get involved in running for school board?
You're correct. Running for school board office has traditionally, in the vast majority of our 327 school districts in the state, been relatively low cost, cost to run. Certainly in the larger metro areas, Des Moines, Sioux City, Iowa City, Davenport, and on down the list, the cost has been higher just to receive visibility. You need more yard signs in a larger community. The difference this year in campaign committees, as one of your reporters noticed, we really won't have data on that until the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board releases it. I'm going to withhold judgment until we see what that data is.
It has been a unique period in time. We are still living in this unique and difficult historical period. And for everyone working in education, it has been such an incredibly difficult time. What do you think we can take away from what we've seen in the past 2 years about, you know, how school boards have been really incredibly important to their individual districts, but have also been the source, or you know, at the center of so much scrutiny?
So we have certainly seen over time in individual communities some controversial issues that have brought out community interest in both board meetings and in school board elections. Those local issues tend to be things like a boundary redrawal or a closing of a building or a personnel issue, some decision at the local level. This is the first time in decades that I think we've seen, not just in our state, but nationwide, some pretty contentious and polarizing issues come to the forefront in multiple communities across the state and even the nation. And you've identified them: our COVID response, masks, no masks, how we teach about race in our schools. And I think the benefit of that is to draw attention to what communities should be talking about. What do we want for our students, and how will we find common ground? And that's the challenge, I think, that can occur at the local level and that school boards are really working on, is how do we find something that the majority of our community can come together around.
Lisa, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Lisa Bartusik is Executive Director of the Iowa Association of School Boards. And as I just said, we are experiencing an unusual moment right now. But this is not the only time when political issues on the federal or state level have influenced candidates to run for school board. My final guest of the day worked for Governor Terry Branstad's administration in the 90s. Her work focused on education, workforce, and cultural affairs policy. Jody Butler, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I do want to look back in time a little bit. Now, during the 90s, one of the issues that got a whole lot of attention was surrounding Common Core. For people who weren't watching closely or they don't remember, tell us a little bit about what was going on then.
Well, historically, we go back to 1983, believe it or not, with a nation at risk when Reagan was president. So that was first the big aha moment for people that we needed to focus on education. And then in 1989, we had President Bush number one, who did a major effort on national goals with the Governors Association. And Terry Branstad was part of that with Bill Clinton, who was then governor. And they went to great lengths to establish national goals. That was a big brouhaha. And then again in 1989, after they did a National Education Summit, they came back in 1996 when Governor Tommy Thompson, a Republican from Wisconsin, and the National Governors Association worked with a number of business leaders to look at those goals and establish some common standards and assessments along with technology for the state and local levels in order to move forward on those national education goals that had been established a number of years earlier. That then got defined as Common Core so that you could actually look across the United States to have some common language around the core curriculum, math, science, and language arts primarily. And that was really contentious because it was really the first time over that period of time that people had to talk to one another about those issues. So while controversy is not new, I think it's the first time in 20 years that we've really seen misinformation and falsehoods that spread rapidly through basic social media platforms and email. Back in the day, we didn't have a lot of technology available. In fact, we didn't really have very good email systems, even at state government in the 90s. That was really when we started to get organized around technology. So we had the Department of Education out doing a lot of the work in forums across the state and with AEA support and with local districts. And that was how we communicated with one another about those issues. So that's the context. We have a little bit different context than we do today.
Well, and as Lisa alluded to just a moment ago, when we look at things historically, we've seen sort of this move for less local control over time on both the federal and the state level. And as you're saying, if people remember, a lot of these programs that were brought forth by presidents of different parties and their education departments were to try to kind of stabilize the U.S. education system because there were incredible disparities between different parts of the country and different states and different communities within states and all of that. So was that kind of the hot button? People felt like they were losing control of their districts?
They did, and there were people really uncertain because the issues hadn't been defined. The words or the language that we needed to talk about, we needed to set parameters for how we were going to talk about it, and we had to search for ways to find common ground, and that was extremely important, and I heard a number of folks on your show today talking about that's really what we need to be able to do. The threats and the name-calling and the negative campaigning and the anger that may motivate people. What we have to figure out now is you need to seek out those who disagree and are leading the disagreement so that they can be heard. And at the same time, you have to agree to disagree because arguing doesn't accomplish anything. If anybody wants to achieve common ground, they'll work toward that for the common good.
So looking again back in time a little bit, I mentioned the struggle over Common Core. Are there other periods in time that you can see where some of the big hot button political issues that rose to the surface around the country, the kinds of things that people refer to as culture wars, really inserted themselves into local school boards?
The biggest one that I can recall is human growth and development, and some folks call it sex ed. And that was a big deal because parents were very concerned about what their children were going to learn in school and what was appropriate at what levels. And that was a pretty hot button issue. And one of the things that you've also talked about today is that public service, by definition, is to serve the entire community, not just those who agree with one's own opinions, is really difficult sometimes for people to grasp that these hot button issues are only one element of everything that's going on in a school district. And if you're looking for common ground, it may take you a while to get there on those hot button issues. But the reality is, if you're focusing on children and you're working with teachers and administrators as a local school board member, you're a policymaking board, you're an advisory, you're working to be a problem solver, not an ideologue. While you can be passionate about something, being a fanatic and not listening doesn't really help do that core educating of children.
You mentioned that the way that we communicate has changed dramatically since you were working for the Branstad administration in the mid-90s. Of course, now communication is so instantaneous, and we do have social networks that both allow us to communicate quickly, but it also facilitates the spread of disinformation. And we have seen so many of these, areas where we'd like to have civilized civic engagement break down into insults and infighting. How are you feeling at this moment? I mean, on one hand, a lot more people are running for school board, and that could be seen as a really great thing for local engagement. But we're also seeing just some really ugly things going on at the same time. How are you feeling about the future, Jody?
Well, it's a little difficult right now because we're in the middle of a viral pandemic, and most of the elderly may be a little too young to remember the fear of polio, but the stress that's accompanying the pandemic is making civil discourse extremely difficult, and the decision-making to accommodate health and safety needs is also difficult because it's a moving target. So trying to figure out all the varying points of view and basic personal opinions, if we could move beyond opinion and really work toward common ground, it is that language and looking at the words that people object to or whatever it may be. They get stuck, I think, owning their opinion without listening to someone else. And I'm optimistic that the pendulum will swing again and that we will see things normalize once we get through this pandemic.
It does seem a little unfair to ask anybody to look into the future right now, whereas if I'd asked you 2 years ago to look into the future, there's no way you would have seen where we are in this moment.
Not at all. And it's made it very difficult, I think, for local communities because we've got the varying levels of, as we heard from Cedar Rapids, the mask mandates that are in place are temporary, addressing a specific issue in that their, infection rates are running very high. So now is the time to think about what will be happening in the future. I haven't heard anyone talk today about the vision of what we want for education in Iowa, and that's important.
Jody Butler, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Charity.
Jody Butler, she worked for the Governor Terry Branstad's administration in the 90s. Her work focused on education, workforce, and cultural affairs policy. This hour, we've been talking about school board elections and the role of school boards around the state of Iowa. Election Day is coming up on November 2nd. We encourage everybody to get out and vote. And, of course, early voting has already begun in many municipalities around the state. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.